Welcome in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Got a great show for you today, folks. Before we get to it, I got to tell you, I saw The Exorcist Believer last night. Let's make it short and sweet. Good premise for this movie. I was excited to see this movie before I walked in. I'm a huge fan of The Exorcist films. This one has a good setup when you walk in. Twin possessions. The possession of the two girls. The fact that two families are affected here, and these families aren't getting along as these two girls are possessed. Leslie Odom Jr. is one of the fathers in here, the African-American father. And he does a very good job in this movie, as he is a hard skeptic in this movie. And the other family is the believing family in this movie. They're the family that really does go to church, the hard God-fearing family. Ellen Burstyn, of course, is in this movie. She returns in this movie, does an excellent job in this movie. And of course, she's kind of estranged from Regan, doesn't know where Regan is. So I'll leave it at that. And there are some other characters that are brought in as well. Now, the title of the film, The Exorcist Believer, really does bring in a theme of, and this isn't really spoiling anything for you, it brings in the theme of we all can be believers and all can help in the exorcism of a demon or the devil or whatever you want to call it. It takes away a little bit, although Catholicism is involved in this movie, it takes away the belief that Catholicism is the only way to get rid of a demon or the devil, which I like. All good premises. There's a lot of good premises in this movie. However, it does fall a little short, unfortunately. There's some stumbling blocks in this movie. With that being said, I did like the movie. With that, as far as horror movies go, I'd give this about a 3 out of 5. I'd say you'll be pleased with a matinee. If you pay full price for it, you might be a little disappointed. But I still encourage you to go see the movie. It opens Friday. Again, The Exorcist Believer is in theaters this weekend. Let's get to our program today, shall we? I'm excited for this program today. I got to tell you, folks, it's hard to step into a program and be the person who's front and center, or to try and quote unquote fill somebody's shoes. Filling somebody's shoes is not the idea. The idea is to step into a spot and to knock it out of the park. And my guest today has stepped into a spot and knocked it out of the park. Cindy Kaza is my guest today. She is the psychic medium who has stepped into the spot at the Dead Files and absolutely knocked it out of the park. Cindy Kaza is, of course, a psychic medium that you've known from the Holzer Files, the Ghosts of Devil's Perch, and of course is now on Travel Channel's Dead Files. Cindy has been extremely intuitive since very early childhood. At the age of 10, she had her first memorable experience with a spirit. Days after losing a childhood friend in a fatal car accident, Cindy woke up in the middle of the night to see her friend standing next to her bed. At the time, she dismissed this experience and convinced herself that it was just a dream. It wasn't until her early 20s that she realized she was having her psychic and mediumistic experiences all along. Now, during this awakening, she began searching for answers and reasons for her experiences and became aware of her multifaceted abilities as a psychic medium. She began training not only in the United States, but also overseas at the Arthur Findlay School of Intuitive Sciences in England. She believes in compassionately sharing her gift with others, also while opening up others to their gifts that they too possess, and that everyone is inherently intuitive and able to feel spirit. Let's welcome in, for my first experience with this psychic medium, Cindy Kaza. Hi, Cindy, how are you?
Hi, nice to see you.
Good to see you. I gotta, again, tip my cap to you. I am thoroughly enjoying you on Dead Files, and really, you are a bright, shining star there at Travel Channel.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a real honor to be invited to be on so many programs for Travel Channel, and also an honor to be asked to do Dead Files. It's just like the show's, it's been on forever, 15 seasons. Mm-hmm. So it's just like it's been a really fun journey for sure. So thank you.
I got to tell you, they really threw you into the deep water too in these first few episodes. The episodes are enjoyable, but man, have you got some dark cases. Tell me.
Because like you've seen me in Holzer Files, right? And Holzer Files mm-hmm. wasn't really dark per se. Like we would encounter some things, maybe it's like some spirits that were a little bit pissed off, but I wouldn't necessarily call it like a dark show, you know?
Yeah.
It was an interesting show to be a part of because, especially as a medium, because Hans Holzer was such a believer in using mediums during paranormal investigations. And honestly, nowadays, that's not as common. It's becoming more common. But, as I stepped into the paranormal field, I kind of noticed that, there are a lot of paranormal investigators that don't actually like working with mediums, you know? So when I got asked to do Holzer Files, it was like such a great opportunity for me because I knew that Hans believed in mediums, and I got to go into these locations so many years later to see if what I was getting matched up with the mediums that Hans worked with. And that was really, really fun. And Dead Files, we're dealing with families that have really extreme paranormal activity and are having like experiences that are to them very terrifying. Right.
Yeah.
And so, naturally you go in and you're like, I'm always hoping it's not going to be something crazy, but it seems like it's been like pretty, pretty wild. Filming was pretty wild. Right. And, I say this, a lot in interviews because I really do believe it. Like most of the time we're not dealing with demonic forces or inhuman forces that, demonic, using that word is very dogmatic, right? So when we think of demon, we think of the Catholic Church, that's the language we use, especially in this culture. You know, if I were in another culture, it might be called something different, but the energy might feel the same, right?
Right.
So just to get that out there. But most of the time when I encounter these energies that feel aggressive and angry, it's a spirit that just has a lot of unfinished business that's unhappy. Mm-hmm. And so it's an opportunity for me to show up and hopefully help the families and the spirits, right? Because I'm working for both dimensions.
Right.
But you're right. I got thrown into the fire with some dark cases.
I tell you, this is where I'm extremely impressed with you. In the cases you've had this year, you have had, it seems like, every and any type of dark spirit. And
it's true.
You've had to sift through every type of spirit and you've had to categorize it. And you've had to do it on the fly because they've all been in one house. It seems like all at one time on one or the other case.
It's wild. And the episode that we filmed in California where I was picking up on the land cracked open and something came out of the land.
Yes.
Honestly, I was like, what the hell is this? Like, it wasn't demonic. It wasn't human. It was definitely inhuman, but like, it was so interesting, that case, because before I even got there, I knew in my being, I needed to offer tobacco to the land, right? I knew that I had to ask permission to be on that land and to be doing the work that I was doing on the land. And by the end of the investigation, it was just like such a tricky case because as a psychic medium, and in my opinion, when the land is that angry, good luck. It's really a tricky thing to navigate. And so I'm grateful, because a lot of people have been commenting like, oh, well, the family isn't taking Cindy's advice. They did their own thing. And hey, I say like whatever floats your boat, whatever works for you. Like if a family is finding peace at the end, that's all I could ever hope for. And if by me telling them to leave pushes them really hard to seek solutions that they weren't seeking before, good for them, But there have been some challenging cases where like I'm seeing things so clearly, and it's hard when, you're trying to relay this to a family, but I also understand that they have to follow whatever works for them and their belief system,
With that case, and that was very intriguing because you're coming into it cold. You get that feeling. Now, I have to ask you, does an elemental automatically feel to you differently, so much differently that you get that automatic feeling that it's tied to the land?
Yeah, so I could feel it like elementals to me, like they have a totally different feeling. It feels like that particular case, super massive energy, like a large, massive energy that came out of the land. So I know it's not demonic. I know it's not alien. I know that it's connected to the land and elemental.
Okay.
And so it's a feeling. I can feel it. So sometimes I see, sometimes I feel, sometimes I hear. And in that case, I got it in a few different ways. I got it through automatic writing. I got it through feeling. I got it through clairvoyance. And, you know, I think like, it's important for people to also recognize that, and this is my belief system, the land, everything has a spirit. Mm-hmm. Trees have a spirit. The ground has a spirit. Water has a spirit. And we forget that sometimes in our culture, like we don't approach the land as having its own spirit and all of the elements. And I think that, you know, it's something that I hope people can pay more attention to. And it's something that's important in general for people in the world to get on board with, because, you know, we walk into situations all the time, not really thinking about the land, if that makes sense. Like where we build, how we dispose of our garbage, like water, all of the things, and the land is going to get pissed off. This is a reality. Right. If you look at indigenous peoples, they talk about this all the time.
Well, I have friends that are Native American, and I have friends that are shaman, and they make offerings all the time. And so when I saw you pull out tobacco, I mean, wait a minute, how does Cindy have the instinct to know to offer tobacco? Is that something you've done before as a practicing medium? And do you keep it on you? I'm just curious.
I do, like, for paranormal investigations, if I know, like, for example, when I'm filming, I always have tobacco handy in case I need to use it.
Okay.
And I've also learned from Native Americans. I spend time in upstate New York, and I've, you know, traveled the world learning from different indigenous healers and indigenous peoples. And so I've really grown more, or I've become more aware of the power that the land has, the spirit of the land, and also the importance of respecting the land. Because it gets overlooked a lot of time in paranormal investigations, just the respect of the land, you know, and making an offering.
Yeah. It was just such a, I don't know how to put it other than such a smart investigation, because there were so many layers and facets to that investigation there in California that it had to be peeled away like an onion. There are just so many layers to that, this season, this half season for you has been so challenging that I don't know that there are very many mediums that would have been able to cleave their way through this. I think there are quite a few that probably would have thrown up their hands and just walked away.
I don't know. I mean, I hope not, maybe. Right. I don't know. But, you know, because here's the thing, Tim, it's like, paranormal investigations, I teach mediumship a lot. I love teaching mediumship. Mm-hmm. And I teach paranormal investigation to mediums, because what a lot of mediums, I think, don't understand, at least mediums that have trained the same way that I have. So I trained with the spiritualists, and I spent a lot of time in the UK, and spiritualism is an organized religion. It's not my religion, but the mediumship training is like probably the best in the world. This is my opinion, right? Mm-hmm. But when we're trained in that particular way, and I know a lot of mediums that have been, there aren't a lot of mediums trained that way that do paranormal investigations, because a lot of spiritualists don't believe that anything dark exists, right? And so for a while I was like, oh, I guess nothing dark exists. And then I started traveling again to different cultures and to different, you know, different countries, and I'm like, no, like, there's something here. Like, you know, I was living in love, light, unicorns and rainbows, but there's a lot more to the story than this, right? And so a lot of the students that I'm teaching now are now just becoming more aware of the idea that yes, there can be lightness and dark. It doesn't have to be evil. It's all part of the oneness. It all exists. We all have a shadow aspect of ourselves. Therefore, it's not surprising that there's, you know, a shadow aspect in the spiritual world as well. And I believe that when I'm encountering, you know, these negative aspects of a spirit, I believe I'm encountering a fragmented aspect of the spirit. Because if you look at people that have had near-death experiences, right, they're able to be in many different places all at the same time. And if you can view the spirit world that way, well, then it doesn't make sense that there's the entirety of a soul trapped in one location. Okay. And so then we have to ask ourselves the question, why am I encountering this aspect of this soul? Like, where there could be another aspect somewhere else communicating with another medium, right?
Oh, okay.
So Right. So then, okay, I'm going, let's just use the California episode for an example. I'm going in and I'm feeling the fragmented, traumatized aspect of the woman who lived there, who was looking for her daughter, Mary. Like when she was living at that house, she was depressed. She had grief. Her daughter had died. She couldn't go back to Poland. And so pieces can fragment off and stay. And those aspects of the soul need healing. Right.
Yes.
And so we have to figure out like which aspect of the haunting. And this is what I tell my students. Paranormal investigation is actually more complicated than just getting up and doing a gallery reading or bringing through family, people's loved ones who have died, because we have to look at the land. We have to look at who's in the house from the spirit world. We have to look at how the spirit world is affecting the people in the living. And then we have to figure out how to fix it, if we can fix it at all. And so you're really peeling back, as you said, the layers of the onion and trying to understand like what is really causing the chaos in the house, because a lot of times there are many things that are contributing to haunting, including and often somebody in the house that's very open to the spirit world and is unaware of their ability, or they've, pushed it aside for many years. They don't want to deal with it. And mediums are like a lighthouse in the middle of the ocean. So if you're a medium and your lighthouse is shining bright, you better believe there are going to be spirits all around. So I don't know. I have a little ADD. I went off on a tangent. But the point is, right, peeling back the layers and trying to figure out what's really happening.
That brings me to an interesting point that you started to go into, but I want to flesh it out a little bit more, and that's this. You started to point out when a medium is being trained, they're love, light, and unicorns, and there are still a lot that reside in that land. Now, is it a matter of denial that they choose not to see the darker side, or is it part of the training that they reside on a certain plane and choose not to get down into the deeper, darker realm? What is it that they don't see that deeper, darker realm initially?
You know, that's a really excellent question, Tim, and I don't really have all the answers for it. I would be arrogant to make a blanket statement about why certain people don't experience these energies. But, you know, what I believe is something like this. Let me give you this example. Okay, so if you're a working medium and you are afraid to feel or see the scene of somebody on the other side who had died by murder, right? Whose life had been taken from them. If that's something even unconsciously you're afraid to experience, the spirit world, the people on the other side are going to know like, well, this person isn't even going to listen to my story. They're going to push me away because they're going to be afraid of what they're seeing. So why would I go talk to that medium?
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Or, I mean, so when I began my journey as a medium doing readings, I was a little bit afraid of this energy. So it was bringing through a lot of like, you know, grandparents and, you know, parents and love light unicorns and rainbows. And then when I became less afraid, then I'm getting murders, then I'm getting suicides, then I'm getting drug overdoses, then I'm getting children who have died, right? But I had to be right with myself enough to allow those energies to come in to relay the messages to the people in the living.
So you have to work that muscle and you have to be strong enough in order to take the good with the bad.
And, you know, some mediums come in and they see that stuff naturally, like they see it, that's something that's always happened to them. Right. But it's just kind of an interesting unfolding of my mediumship over time. It's been interesting to look back and say, wow, I've really changed. But I'll tell you the other thing, Tim, is that and I teach this to all my students that we as mediums have to be willing to look at our own shadows and look at our own triggers and our own traumas and acknowledge them and sort through that stuff if we want to be the best mediums that we can be. Because if we're triggered by a spirit, we're not going to be able to be an objective observer long enough to give the message that needs to be given. So this is the example I use. If you grew up with an alcoholic father who was super abusive and he tore the family apart, and then you encounter on the other side an alcoholic father, it will be hard for you to know whether or not you're projecting your own story into the reading or not, because you have that experience that has not been healed.
And you can't give an impartial message if you're putting your own message over the top.
It's very, very important for people to really acknowledge that part of mediumship. And I wish somebody had told me that when I first started doing mediumship. And it took me time, and it took me, you know, I've been doing a lot of shadow work. Let's see, like, shadow is not bad. Everybody has a shadow. And I think in our culture, we're taught to avoid the shadow. We're taught to pretend it doesn't exist. If we look at our shadows, then there's shame and guilt involved. And unfortunately, that's doing us a disservice as a culture, but also mediums, you know, also need to remember that and look into those things. Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, I know this much. You're getting dead on results as a result on the season this year. And man, I mean, some of the stuff, I got to ask you this, and maybe we should take our break here and we'll ask the question. Are you getting the reaction out of Mr. Dishavi that you thought you would get? I want you to hold that answer for when we come back. Let's take our break early. When we come back, we'll ask more questions of Cindy as of the reaction from her co-host as to what's been going on, and maybe some of the things from behind the scenes that maybe you've even stunned Cindy about what she's found as far as her results from these investigations. We're talking to Cindy Kaza, the new co-host of Dead Files, and we're going to talk more about the Dead Files, and we'll even maybe talk about some of the episodes you haven't seen yet. We won't talk much, no spoilers, of course, but there's three more episodes. In fact, one of them, as we're taping, is going to air tonight. This show airs Thursday, October 5th, and there's a new episode airing tonight, Burning Hatred, which has to do with a childhood home of a lady who's always giving her an unsettling feeling, but it never reaches the point where she gets too concerned for anyone's safety. However, things have taken a dangerous turn. So that lady's name is Paula. We'll talk a little bit about that later in the episode. So more with Cindy Kaza when we come back. We'll be talking about the Dead Files. And has Steve Dishavi had an open jaw at some of the things that Cindy's found? We'll talk about that when we come back next here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Our guest is medium and psychic Cindy Kaza, the new co-host of Dead Files on the Travel Channel. One of the things we should mention, Cindy, people that are maybe experiencing an extreme haunting in their home that may need help, they can go to travelchannel.com/deadfiles. They can click on Help Me right there with the Dead Files and can submit their case for help. Also, I haven't mentioned as well, if you want to see the episodes on demand, they can go to Max, which all the episodes are on demand. They're at Max if they want to see those episodes. Cindy, I got to ask, because I see the reaction of Mr. Dishavi on Steve Dishavi on Dead Files, and it looks like he's pretty impressed with what you're doing on camera. What is his reaction off camera? I gotta imagine he's pretty impressed.
I mean, look, he's such a great guy. I love Steve. He's like my big brother, you know. I've really enjoyed working with him. And you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to like talk about myself that way, but I'm glad that I'm getting evidence that works for the cases that make sense. And I think people know this, but if you don't know, like, Steve and I don't talk before the reveal. So
yes.
I'm hearing what he got at the same time as he's hearing what I got during the investigation. So there are times when I'm even like, wow, that's crazy. Like, you know, I'm like, and I'm always in awe of the fact that this is even happening at all. So my husband says to me, he's like, why are you so surprised when you get something right? He's like, you've been doing this for a long time. I'm like, I don't know. I think I'm just like, just constantly in awe of the fact that we're having these experiences. And I think that just keeps me, it's almost like being a kid, you know, I'm just like excited about what's happening. But you know, I think Steve and I have both, you know, had some really interesting reveals, and it's been fun. I mean, the butcher episode, that was when I was like, wow, this is like, I can't even, it's crazy, you know? And So yeah, no, it's fun working with him. I love him. He's a super nice guy. He really cares when he's talking to the families, and he really tries to get to the bottom of what's going on. You know, he asks really good questions. So yeah. It's a joy to work with him. Yeah.
Well, he's an incredible investigator. He really is.
Yeah.
And I think some of the stories you've had so far have been, some of the circumstances have been so out of control. I mean, let's face it. That if you were to tell any normal human being, walk into their house, I mean, let's just use one for example. There's a serial killer that's trying to use your son.
So messed up, to, I know.
You know, eventually wants to walk into your son's body and use him to continue his killing spree. Just, I mean, to say that to any normal human being would drive them to the edge of insanity. Just that one detail. Then there's other things going on in the background. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. And, you know, it's hard for me to give those messages. I'm like, oh, I like, it's so hard for me to say, like, this is literally what I saw, because I'm so careful, I guess, about how my words can influence or affect other people, mm-hmm. you know, but then I also have to be honest with what I'm receiving, because they've called us in to investigate their homes to see what's going on, because they're having a really difficult time. So there's just like this piece where it's like, yeah, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to tell this family to move out of their homes, or that a serial killer spirit is in the home. Like, it's really difficult for me as a medium to have to deliver those messages. I don't take it lightly is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
You know?
And there's been what? There's been two families now this so far this season that's aired that you've told them you should probably move out of their home, and they've agreed. Now that's not an easy thing.
Well, no, they didn't agree. They agreed, and then they didn't move out.
Oh, and so they didn't move out. Okay.
So and that's okay. Look, like I was saying before, and there are things that people don't, just to, you know, before I say what I'm going to say, that, it's important for people to know that there are a lot of things that are said in a reveal between me and Steve and the families that don't make it on camera.
Okay.
You know, because the interview, the reveal is like longer than what you're seeing, because mm-hmm. there's only a limited amount of time for a television program, right? Like the investigation, my walkthrough is longer than what people are seeing. That's just how it goes with television. But before I give those messages to move out of the house, I really take the time to make sure that other things have been exhausted. Like the family that was in, I think it was in, was it Texas? It was the episode that was tagged onto the end of Amy's episodes, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
So that family had already called in a priest to bless the house, and it made the activity worse.
Yeah.
So I knew that. So when I asked them to leave, I had that in mind, because I knew that they had already tried, you know?
Yeah.
And the family in California with the land, what people don't know is there are other people in that area that also had cancer, that were getting sick. They had the land, the ground tested to make sure there wasn't something in the ground that was making people sick, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's like all this other stuff that's in there that people don't see. So the last thing I want to do is tell somebody to leave their home, because that is not an easy thing to do, right? It sounds a little bit insane. You're like, yeah, move out. You know, it's not easy for people to do.
Was the family in Tucson?
It was Arizona. Yeah, it was Arizona. Tucson. Sorry, Arizona. It wasn't Texas. It was Tucson.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with that case, that, I mean, you're talking about a man who had his father handed that home down.
It came down. Yep. And then like so what was also crazy about that case is, so their son had been in a car accident, right?
Yes,
but then there's like other car accidents that had happened where people had died and from, you know, and that were connected to the house. It was like all these things seemed to be like just continuing from each family that moved in, like whether it be financial ruin, car accidents, depression. And if you look at the case, the previous owners, the two previous owners had those experiences too. And then the family there was having those experiences as well. And you're like, what do you do? And then how do you sell the house to somebody else in good conscience? So that's tricky too.
Right.
Right.
And pass those problems on. Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, it's almost unconscionable, but and you could tell the man in Tucson was devastated, but understood, you know, mm-hmm. he understood at that time, at the time of the reveal. I'm not talking about afterwards, but just during the reveal, The woman looks almost...
She wanted to move out. Yeah, she was relieved. Tell me to move out. I want to get out of here.
Yeah, she's relieved. She's like, thank God you guys came along. And the emotion just on the faces was something to see. And it's that moment in the reveal. I don't think there's any more emotive reveal in the history of paranormal television. I don't think you get a more emotive reveal than on Dead Files. I just think it's the nature of the program, really.
Mm-hmm. And you know what I've also found, Tim? It's like, even if somebody doesn't move out, even if they don't take the exact advice I give them, that's actually okay with me. Like, everybody has to decide what they want to do for themselves, what's in alignment with their belief system. But just simply showing up and telling a family, I see what you feel. I see what you're experiencing. You are not crazy. To validate them and their experiences is deeply healing, because a lot of people have experiences all the time and they don't know who to talk to about it. They feel like they're losing their minds. They're afraid to say anything because people will think they're crazy. And so to just be able to show up and validate a family and say, I see what you're going through. I see it. I saw it too. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, that's enough, right? Because that's helping somebody. Mm-hmm. And I would always hope that a family can find peace in their home. Like, I've said that a million times, but that's the reality. Like that's all I hope for. And I feel so honored to be able to sit with these families and talk to them about what's happening.
Yeah, I hear you. What is the hardest thing, especially this season, what's been the hardest thing psychically for you to make contact with? What's the thing that it's got not only that ick factor, but you're like, you know, if I never had to make contact with anything like that again, it would be too soon.
Oh, gosh, that is a tough question. Oh, my gosh. I don't know, Tim. That's a tough one. I have to really think about that. So, oh, my God. I think, again, like going back to land and the connection to elementals and how the land affects the hauntings, like that's something that I am actually excited to learn more about and to dive into in a deeper way, right? Because mm-hmm. I think that at the end of the day, the land and the land spirits, they have a lot of power and they contribute to a lot of hauntings. And, you know, I've seen, in investigations, like even water, you know, and we know that water is a conduit. It can, you know, really attract in or hold in energy and paranormal activity. But like, even looking at when people build their house, if it's on top of these little pockets of water, how that can contribute. Portals, things like that. Like I feel like I'm kind of in the beginning of my deep exploration of all those things. I mean, I know about it, I've studied it, but there's so much more to it than I think I'm even aware of. Like I'm excited to grow in that space.
You know, I had an interesting thought, and I don't know if this would pertain to that particular elemental in that house. That elemental sat up in the attic. And mm-hmm. I know John Zaffis has always said that running water will bind any evil spirit or any evil spirit that's contained in something like a doll or something like that, something that's contained in an object. But would there be a way to contain that elemental, like, say, up in that attic, if you had some sort of running fountain or something underneath it, running water?
Is a really good question. And I don't know, because elementals are so powerful and they're massive and they can move quickly. And I mean, it's like, again, like that is where I think as a medium, I really am interested in exploring more and really learning more about those types of hauntings, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, because if you're dealing with an elemental and then you add water to it, I don't know.
Or could anything like a river or anything like that cancel out that elemental? Or is that elemental just too powerful? Or is that something that we aren't meant to know?
I mean, I particularly don't know at this point in my development as a medium, but I'm sure that if you talk to people that are really connected to the land and to the elements and to water and earth and fire and wind and ether, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they'll probably have a much better understanding of what to do. I'm sure that there is some sort of a solution, but my understanding now, elementals are massive and powerful and hard to contain.
Okay. What was more of an ick factor to grab onto? The serial killer with the inappropriate touching?
Oh my God.
Or I'm trying to think of the other one that you came across. Or the there was one with the paranormal investigator where he said he had the experience with the, I'm trying to remember. He said something about there was a hell experience, but there was.
Oh, Job, that was from the Colorado episode. So yeah. He was having really bad nightmares of like being thrown into hellfire and going to a really dark place.
Wasn't there a black mass or something like that? There was something going on in that house as well.
Yeah, that house was crazy too. There was the guy that, there's like so many cases. And like, I just watched that one. So there was the kids that were super open. The daughter was very, very psychic. And she literally had like a line of spirits standing outside of her home.
So what was more of a creep factor to you? The fact that there were that many spirits lined up to want to talk to that little girl, or the serial killer who wanted to get at the little boy?
Serial killer, for sure. Yeah. I mean, serial killer, come on. Like, it's like, oh, I think I encountered two killers this season, like two murderers, right? And I mean, it's like that energy still, when I see it, I'm like, oh, this is really bad, right? Like this person did really terrible things and they are in this house. You know, and look, children are super open. And so I can relate to this little girl, because as a kid, I was having these experiences too. And I can imagine that's probably what my door looked like too. A line of spirits hanging outside of the door. And for kids, they just don't, a lot of times they don't know what's really happening. They don't understand that they're that open. And then they can have mood swings. They can feel anxious. They can see spirits and they don't know what to do about it. It's terrifying. So, I mean, both the situations, serial killer, yes, but also the children who are that open. I mean, it's really important, I think, as a medium to tell the family that they need to help their child find a way to deal with these spirits. And I think what was complicated about that case in Colorado is that the family, they were paranormal investigators. So yes, they were bringing spirits into the house with a kid that's super open, on top of having a deep haunting already. So they have to actually maintain their house because they still do these investigations and they still can bring stuff home with them.
That brings up a really interesting question here, and that's this. There are a lot of paranormal investigators that listen to podcasts like this one, and they think they're going out and they're doing good, even though some of them are hobbyists. Let's face it. They just go to buildings on the weekends to have fun and get their thrills. There are others that go out and try to do good things and help families. Either way, they are dabbling. And dabbling maybe in a field that they shouldn't be. Let's face it. Some of them are maybe doing more harm than good. Do you consider that episode to be a warning to those people that maybe they're messing in an area they shouldn't be?
Well, I think it's more important that people check their intentions when they're going into an investigation. Because this is what I also teach my students. Like, what is your intention going into an investigation? If your intention is to be like, oh, this is fun. Look what I captured on my EVP. Oh my gosh, I saw a ghost. Something moved. While those experiences are like thrilling and exciting because you're having a connection with the afterlife. Like, that's amazing within itself. But there's a lot more to it than that, because we have to remember that we're dealing with these aspects of these souls that still probably have some unfinished business or have a story to tell. Mm-hmm. And to be aware of that piece of it, because I've seen paranormal investigators and mediums go to a location, just be like, look what I got, look what I got. It's like, well, okay, great. You got that, but what else? What next? You know? So it's just about having respect, because I understand all sides of it. I understand all sides of it. But also, being aware of the fact that we can, you know, have these energies that kind of stick to our auras. They can affect us, and to have a maintenance plan. So my maintenance plan is this: like, if I get off of an investigation and I feel off, I'm like, ooh, my energy is off. I don't feel right. I have a friend that I call that does energy clearing. She's amazing. And I call her. I'm like, Becca, I need a session right now. She gets in there and helps me out.
Okay.
But I know now, I'm aware of that. So again, it's like, I just would like to remind people to check their intentions before going into any investigation. Go have fun, do your investigation, but at least thank the spirits, be kind to the spirits, you know, don't scream at them to come out and, you know, like be aware that we're dealing with aspects of the soul of a human, you know, or inhuman.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This may seem like an odd statement / question, but was there more to Joe than what we saw on camera? It seemed like he was hiding, for lack of a better term. When he would speak to you guys, like when he would talk about his cousin, he would say, "Oh no, but he was a really good guy. He'd give you the shirt off his back." And it seemed like he was hiding in plain sight. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, Joe, oh, his cousin that got killed, that got murdered.
When, like, he'd say, "Well, but I'm a paranormal investigator. Well, but you know, I do this. Well, but I do that." It seemed like he had more cards to show, that he wasn't showing the cameras, that he wasn't showing you guys. Was there more to the story there, that the reason there was a haunting in his house, maybe there was more to the story that he didn't want to show you? Like maybe there was more, I don't want to say occult activity going on, but maybe they were dabbling a little bit more in spirits than what we know.
Well, look, I mean, he was very open with the fact that he's a professional paranormal investigator, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't think he was hiding anything. I think maybe what it could have been was when you present somebody with information that makes them have to look at how their actions may be contributing in a larger way to what's going on in the home, it's a little bit like, oh no, I am accountable for some of what's happening and I need to really sit with that, you know? And in his defense and the family's defense, like it's a lot coming at them in the reveal because they don't know what I'm going to say to them until the cameras are rolling.
Sure.
And so they have to take all of that in. Super sweet family, like mm-hmm. really, really mm-hmm. nice people. But yeah, no, I think it's more of like part being a little bit shocked about what Steve and I are sharing with him, but then also having to look at, oh man, like maybe I'm not helping this by doing what I do for a living. And maybe I need to rethink how I'm contributing to the activity and about the kids, you know, because the kids were being affected.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Not only that, but I'll tell you why I think this, Cindy, or why it's hitting me like this. And it hit me like this watching the episode. So I'm watching the episode and it's, well, there's, you know, there's a line of spirits lined up to see the kid, and I've got all this activity going on, and sure, the cousin is around, and you, as you mentioned, the cousin's happy, he's on the other side, he's mm-hmm. fine, and when you smell the cigarette smoke, he's just letting you know he's there, he's fine, he's, mm-hmm. he's crossed over, mm-hmm. everything's fine. But then all of a sudden it's, well, I have this hell experience and this and that, and I'm like, whoa, 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 we just went from 0 to 10 in you know, 0 to 50 in 4 seconds. I mean we hit a really fast speed here. Where does hell come from? You know, I mean,
yeah, you know, again Tim, like what I didn't experience anything demonic in that house, which is why I didn't recommend that they call a priest in,
right?
Because that was not what I was sensing,
right?
But look, like, I mean, I don't know. I can't speak for somebody else. But when people are really focused on like that negative kind of attachment or these energies being demonic, it can create its own kind of thing. Like, right? And if you go demonic very quickly, and this is what a lot of people do sometimes, is that they feel these energies that feel really scary and dark and aggressive, and they immediately think demon. Mm-hmm. And it's actually not demonic.
Right, right.
So maybe he is having dreams of hellfire. I believe him when he says that, but I personally didn't feel a demon there. So I don't know what to say. I want to speak for somebody else.
Steve,
yeah.
Steve brought up something interesting. You know, he talks about medication that you would take before you go to sleep. The other thing he didn't quite bring up to him, or at least it wasn't shown on camera. And this is why the reason why I ask is there more to the story? He doesn't ask him if he feels guilty about what he's doing. Like maybe he's bringing something into the home that he's feeling guilty about, or he's exposing his kids to something that maybe they're not quite ready for yet.
Mm-hmm. And I think Job actually did acknowledge that and feel
he did later.
He did. Yeah. So It's complicated, right? Because it's like, look, again, back to, I've said this a few times, everybody has to do what's right for them. And this has nothing to do with Job necessarily, but I've done investigations where people don't really want the activity to be removed because they like having the experiences. Even if they feel scary, they still are getting something out of the connection to the spirit world. And there are people that are afraid that if the activity is removed, that their connection to the spirit world will also be removed. And in my experience, that's not the case. If you're tapped in and you can see spirits, whether they're dark or light or aggressive or happy, you can feel spirits. So there's some like attachment that people have to paranormal activity. I mean, I really have found that several times where you go in, you're like, this is what I recommend. Like, if you want these spirits out of here, and there are some people that say, well, I don't really want them out of here. I don't know if I do, or maybe some of them, not all of them. And, you know, there are like locations where the owners of the property will say, do not remove any of the spirits here. We don't want you doing a clearing.
That's crazy.
I've seen that several times where because their business revolves around people doing paranormal investigations, they will tell you not to remove the activity.
That is nuts.
It happens, right? And so then as a medium, it's complicated because you're like, well, this spirit is talking to me about all of these things and wants me to tell the story so it can find peace. And then you have the owners of the property saying, don't clear the house. What do you do as a medium? It's like a little bit of it's ethically confusing as a medium, right? You're like, who am I working for here?
Right. You know? Well, you want to do what's right. I mean, you want to help the spirit. I mean, business be damned. I mean, you can always find something else to sell, can't you? I mean, you would think. I mean,
it's just interesting. It's an interesting thing in paranormal investigations. I mean, I've experienced it several times.
That's crazy.
So I also wonder sometimes, again, like if people, they become attached to their connection to the spirit world. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for them to let go of that because they're afraid that it won't come back, that there won't be another opportunity. And it's not true.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I have to ask you, I'm trying to remember which episode it is. It might be the episode 10, the shadow. No, it's not episode 10. It's the one where is it John in Arizona who shook off the ladder?
That was crazy. I get all the cities confused, but that the one where the butcher was. That was the butcher.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. So when we talk about poltergeist activity, or you talk about activity where things are happening physically, that is some of the craziest stuff I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm,
I've got to ask you, Cindy, have you ever seen anything that physical in your life where someone is shook off a ladder? I mean, to that extreme where a ladder is kicked out like that. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
No, and really looking at that footage, it's just so uncomfortable to watch because he was really injured. I mean, he had like a brain injury, his neck was injured, you know? And again, it's like that would not be the first, like, I wouldn't want to go to paranormal activity first because I'd be like, well, what else could have happened there? But when you watch that clip, you're like, that is crazy. And I just was in your house and saw all of these other things, you know? But that was an extreme, very extreme case.
Yeah, he talked about a broken L5. I have an L5 injury, which is a low back injury.
Lower back, yeah.
Yeah, I did that 6 years ago and I'm still suffering with it. I mean, it's a painful injury and it's hard to get rid of because that's the fulcrum of all your weight is right there on the L5.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine when it was shown a couple of times, I cringed each time I looked at it. But to think that that's one spirit that's trying to take over your spot in the house, or it's going after your daughter, potentially your wife, and wants you out of the way. I mean, that's hard to comprehend.
Yeah, it is hard to comprehend. Look, it's hard. Like, sometimes, honestly, Tim, when I'm saying these things, I'm like, this sounds totally insane, but this is, like, I'm seeing so much in this house. Like, I, you know, so it is hard to comprehend. But the spirit world, like, yeah, they have its energy. They have power. I mean, there's so many accounts of people being pushed and shoved and, like, dragged and all of those things, you know? And it's like, there's a lot that we don't understand. I think that the more I learn, the less that I know, but I know that the power of the spirit world is incredible and intense.
I got to tell you, I haven't, up until watching this half season of Dead Files, I had never contemplated or thought it over in my mind or even put it in my lexicon of a serial killer haunting a private residence. It had never
right.
run through my brain, but I mean, that's not a common thing, right? Because now if a viewer of Dead Files is now probably sitting there, not like me. I mean, now I'm sitting there going, well, could I have a serial killer in my house? I mean, but you shouldn't be thinking that way, right? I mean, that shouldn't be a normal thought.
I wouldn't go about your day thinking a serial killer is haunting me. Like, that is just, don't live your lives that way. Anybody, right? But look, like, the reality is, and again, you know, the daughter was super open, didn't realize how open that she is, right? Was in denial about her abilities. And in that sense, and especially if you have an opening, like a portal or something, look, it's like, that's like a train station for the dead, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like it's interesting that that happened, but it's possible that that happened, right? And it's really hard to wrap your head around. It's tricky. Like, what the hell is going on? How did this happen? You know.
I'll tell you what got me thinking about that, Cindy, is we had Jess Lurie on the show on True Crime Tuesday a week ago, and she's written a couple of really good books, and. We were sitting here talking, and she said, she's a native of Minnesota here, and she said, do you realize that there is a nursing home for serial killers in Faribault, Minnesota?
No, there is?
Yes.
No way.
Yes.
How many serial killers are in Minnesota?
Right? But they come from all around the nation, and there's not maximum security, but it's the next step down. And they're immobile, so they don't really move. I mean, it's not like they can move around, but they're behind bars, and it's a nursing home for serial killers. Now this blows my mind, right?
That's crazy. That's terrifying.
I know, Tim. Right? I'm done for the day. I'm done for the day. The minute she says this, I can't. I mean, the interview's pretty much over at that point. I mean, I can't manifest another thought, another question, nothing, right? So at this point, I'm thinking, okay, well, first of all, do family even come visit them? that's the only other thing that comes through my head. But then what happens when they pass? That's the other thing that goes through my head. Do they haunt the nursing home? The other thought was, would you really even want to be a nurse there? But then what happens when they pass? Do they haunt that, or do they go back to where they were? But now you just aired a couple of episodes where there's serial killers in people's houses. And now I'm like, well, geez, they don't even.
I mean, it's not funny. It's not funny. But it's like, look, like, again, back to the soul being able to be in several different places simultaneously, right?
Yeah.
And in both of those locations, you know, the killers lived right around there. They were there. And again, back to a medium is like a lighthouse in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
Think about that, right?
Right. So if you have,
and then sometimes I wonder, I'm like, gosh, I wonder if the serial killer also knew that I was showing up, and they're like, we're going to go there now too. You know what I mean? Cause I talked to them too.
Okay. So then are you afraid that this serial killer, you're in direct contact with him? Are you afraid he tries to follow you home?
Oh, you know, I've had to let go of those fears because, I wouldn't be able to do my job. If I had to think about that all the time and be like, oh, what if it follows me home? Because look, the reality is spirits are around us all the time, everywhere, right? I'm sure there's a murderer around me right now. I'm just saying, in general, if you think about the vastness of the spirit world, sure, that I'm a medium, they are always around us. So I just have accepted that aspect of my work. I can't live in fear and always be afraid that something's following me home, which is why I have a maintenance program where I get energy clearing.
Okay.
You know, like, yeah, that's like, I can't live in that space. How would I function? It'd be way too confusing and hard and scary.
True, true. So what percentage do you think of these spirits and even these not so good spirits actually have some sort of poltergeist type power, like the one that moved the ladder? Do they actually have that type of ability where they could reach out and try and hurt you?
Well, look, like, poltergeist activity, it requires a couple things to be going on at the same time. This is my opinion, right? It's okay, not just the spirit. Like, I feel like there's usually some other, like, land force or somebody that's open or fighting in the family, something else that's contributing to that type of activity.
Okay.
But do spirits in general have power? Yes. I mean, look, how many accounts are there of people saying, I saw a chair move across the floor. I got yanked out of my bed. My leg got pulled in the middle of the night. I got pushed. I mean, these things have been happening forever, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. So it's just showing, yes, those spirits do have power. They do have power, you know? So, you know, it's not fun to think about those things, you know? And I don't like thinking about them either, but it's the reality of the energy of the spirit world, and millions of people have had encounters like that, you know?
So is there something to be said for using some sort of protection, whether it be a religious amulet or some sort of belief totem or something like that, if we just do that to ward off whatever we think is around us?
You know, I think you have to choose something that's in alignment, again, with your belief system. Otherwise, how is it going to work? It's like, if you don't believe in using an amulet, then what's the point? You're like, find sure. something that works for you.
Yeah.
I personally don't go into investigations in fear, because that's not an effective way to show up as a medium. Mm-hmm. I have to try to show up as neutral as possible.
I'm sorry, we froze for a second there. Go ahead.
You know, I wanted to just add something in about murderers, serial killers, people that have harmed people when they were alive. Going back to what we were talking about before about traumas and triggers and shadow work, you know, it's also important to look at, even though it's hard, at mm-hmm. these souls as also having trauma.
Okay.
Because they're people too. They look, I think the saying is, psychopaths are born, sociopaths are made or created.
Okay.
So if you're dealing with somebody who's a sociopath, it's probably safe to assume that they have had extreme trauma in their lives. Something bad has happened to them. And to be able to try to show up and look at that aspect of that soul, because there's a reason that the fragment of that soul is still lingering around. It's a traumatized piece. And it's really easy for us to like look at those souls and say, you're evil, you're horrible, I hate you, get away from me, you did bad things. But at the end of the day, what they actually need is compassion. And it's easy to forget that when you're walking into a house, seeing how the activity is affecting the people that live there. But I have to remind myself of that piece too, and say, you know, yeah, I don't like what this person did when they were alive. It's actually really disturbing. It's awful. But how can I actually look at this soul as a human being and not an animal, and what sure. happened to them when they were alive? And just to tie on the Ed Gein shock doc that I did with Steve Shippey, right?
Yes.
This is an interesting example.
Yep.
So we had to go investigate Ed Gein. And for me, it was particularly interesting because I sensed Ed Gein. I know what he did. He did really scary, terrible things. Like, look how many horror movies have been created from his, what he did, right?
He had a nipple belt. You know?
I mean, it's like horrifying. It's horrifying. You know, it's hard to even imagine that somebody could do something like that. It's like, you know, but when I got to the investigation, I felt his mother. I was like, oh, wow. Oh my gosh. Ed Gein, when he grew up, it was awful. Like, his mom was really mentally ill, traumatized him. Like, it was an awful environment for him to grow up in, you know, and looking at how you know, how things pass down in a lineage. It doesn't usually start with the murderer. It comes from somewhere else. Unless you're a psychopath, I'd say maybe, you know, you're born that way, your wiring is off. It's just you don't have the ability at all to experience empathy or remorse, or you don't understand the idea of consequence. It's just like you come in with a different brain, you know? But again, I know it's hard, but saying, man, how difficult to be to come in a lifetime that way with the inability to feel that. Nobody would choose that, you know?
Yeah.
I guess they're not aware of it. But again, like, you know where I'm going with it. It's like the trying to look at things from a little bit from a deeper level than just saying serial killer, you're terrible, murderer, you're an awful person. Like, what happened? Saying, what happened to you? What happened to you that made you this way?
I have a question for you, because my co-host, we were talking about Ed Gein. He's from Wisconsin, and his father was actually the CEO for Jeffrey Dahmer before Dahmer died.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. And he comes from an interesting background. He's grown up hearing stories of day-to-day stories of Jeffrey Dahmer, but took a particular interest in Ed Gein as well. And there was a psychologist who came up with a theory, and I'm wondering, because psychically you've reached out and mm-hmm. gotten a feeling for Ed Gein. So I'm wondering if you can respond to what this particular therapist, and I'm just paraphrasing here, this particular therapist surmised that Ed Gein, for what he did, especially with the female bodysuit, that when he carved up the female bodysuit and wore it, he surmised that Ed Gein had done that because secretly he had been browbeat by his mother. And he really, back in that day, wanted to become trans. He wanted to become a woman, but his mother would never have let him do that. And that was not a thing then.
Mm-hmm.
But if he had lived in this day and time, would have changed his sex. He would have changed his gender. Did you feel when you reached out to him that simply would have been it, that he would have never been a serial killer had he lived in this day and time, that he simply would have just had the operation?
Oof. That is a loaded question, and I'm certainly not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but my feeling encountering his spirit was he had suppressed so much of his sexual energy. He wasn't allowed to express those feelings, and the attachment to his mother was so intense. She was so controlling. It's that he couldn't separate this rage, this anger. It was like the mix of him not even knowing, I think, what was even necessarily happening. When you grow up in an environment where you're like deeply traumatized, physically, emotionally, mentally abused, and your mother is your object, only object of affection, how could you possibly develop any sort of understanding of what it was like to have a healthy relationship with any woman at all? Mm-hmm. And then all of the rage that you feel towards your mother, which you couldn't express necessarily coming out. I mean, it could be a million things. I mean, I don't, that's my understanding, but that is a really interesting idea. I mean, it could be, you know.
Yeah.
I don't understand the workings of the field of psychology to that level, that depth. But hey, I don't know, maybe. But I think that the trauma, his trauma was so deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting what if game to play, you know,
mm-hmm.
that trauma that he caused others could have been spared if he could have just worked mm-hmm. on himself. You know?
Yeah. If he didn't have a mother that held him hostage his whole life.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like really
exactly.
Right. So it's so challenging. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. With that being said, tonight, a brand new episode, as people are listening to this, if they're listening to this on October 5th, there's a brand new episode of Dead Files that's airing. It's Burning Hatred, which it's Paula's childhood home always gave her an unsettling feeling, but never reached the point where she got too concerned about anyone's safety. However, things have taken a dangerous turn. Do you have any teasers without a spoiler-free teaser for people for tonight?
Ooh, this is a, yeah, I mean... All I gotta say is portals. I don't know. I guess I could give that piece.
Okay.
I don't want to give too much away, but sure. it was an interesting case for sure.
All right. Well, again, 10 p.m., 9 central on Travel Channel. If you are listening before the episode airs tonight, otherwise you can catch it on replay on Max. You can get it on demand on Max, which I encourage you to do. I've got Max at home, so I watch it on demand at home, and I encourage you to do it. Cindy, I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you. I want to thank Cindy Kaza for being on the program today and sharing with us so much information about what goes on in the psychic world. It was really eye-opening today, I got to tell you, especially the serial killer ghost thing, which really blew my mind this week. I got to tell you, I was a little unnerved watching Dead Files and having two serial killer ghosts in this half season following people around. I got to tell you, that on top of Jess Lurie a couple weeks ago with the whole nursing home for serial killer thing, it's kind of messed me up, I'm not gonna lie. So thank you, Cindy, for being on the program today. Had a good time with Cindy today. And remember, folks, Travel Channel tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern time, 9 p.m. Central time. That's live tonight. If you can't catch it live tonight, of course, you can always get it on demand on Max. That's how I tend to watch my Dead Files. I get it on demand on Max because I end up, you know, missing it most of the time live. But by all means, watch it within 48 hours because you want it to count for the ratings for Dead Files. So either way, whether you watch it on demand or if you watch it live, or if you catch it by DVR, you want it to count for the ratings. And of course, we want our friends over at Dead Files to get a good rating for their show. So within 48 hours, whether you catch it on Max or whether you watch it on Travel Channel or you DVR it, by all means, we want them to get their rating. So watch it tonight, please. If you're listening to this on Thursday, October 5th, we want you to tune in to the Dead Files tonight and check out that episode. I'm looking forward to it. I hope you watch it as well. Speaking of episodes, folks, I know you guys like to binge the program here. I know I've kind of harped on it the last few days. Be sure to listen to these episodes of Darkness Radio within 2 weeks of getting your download or getting your notification that you have a new download. We need to get credit with our advertisers and the way we get rated as well in our rating system for the podcast. We want to get our credit with Audio Boom and with our advertisers as well. So if you could, I know you guys like to binge it, whether you're at work or doing whatever you're doing in the yard or when you're doing your chores. Please, if you could listen to it within 2 weeks of getting the download, we'd appreciate it. It helps us with ratings, with credit towards our advertisers, and, you know, and with charting and whatnot. So if you could do that, we'd appreciate it here at Darkness Radio, Bruiser and Jess and Mally and I. It helps us all out. And again, we greatly appreciate it. So I know binging is good, and we like to do that because we like to, you know, fill up our day and keep ourselves busy. But in the end, it does kind of hurt us a little bit, too. So if you want to do us that favor, we greatly appreciate it. Parashare stories. We need your Parashare stories. Tim at darknessradio.com if you want to type them out and send them the old-fashioned way. Or if you want to leave a voice note, darknessradioshow.com. Click on that blue button that's right there on the front page and leave a two-minute voice note. If you need more time, click the button again. Leave another 2 minutes. Keep doing that. Rinse and repeat as much as possible. If you need it, I'll stitch those two-minute loops together, and then we'll put your lovely voice on the show and play it back for everybody. If you want to just be an orator and just tell us your story, otherwise type it out. We'll read it on Wednesdays here on the show. We need your stories, folks. We want to hear your stories here on the show. So please send in your Parashare stories. We greatly appreciate it. That'll do it for this week, folks. Again, another great week here on Darkness Radio. We've got another great guest coming up on Tuesday for True Crime Tuesday, and another great guest coming up on Thursday. If you have a guest suggestion, just send it in at tim@darknessradio.com. Again, send a lead with that guest. I can name potential guests till the cows come home, but again, send some sort of a lead, whether it be a website contact form or whatever it is. Or a phone number or an email, whatever it is for that potential guest that you want to hear here on the show. And I will pursue them toot sweet. That's what I'll do. And we'll get them here on the show so you can hear them. We're into the fall season. We're into football. We're into all kinds of things. And I wish you nothing but a great weekend. I'll be up at KNSI Radio this weekend, so you can listen to me on Saturday morning between 7 and 9 a.m. Central Time, doing something other than paranormal. Just basically weather, sports, and whatnot on news programming. Take a listen at knsiradio.com. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Take care of yourself and each other. We will see you next week. For Jessica Freeberg, for Mally Fox, and for Beer City Bruiser, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for being such great listeners of the program. We'll see you next week for the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio.